Malolele, you're listening to Dateline from RNZ Pacific. I'm Kuroi Hawkins. Coming up...
Our discussions have been focused on making sure that we're aligning that support.
COVID-9 response efforts in the Pacific were high on the agenda for discussions between New Zealand and Australia.
Tonga is totally dependent on foreign aid for these vaccines.
Tonga's COVID-19 vaccination rollout is gathering steam. And
to get into replanting needed a different mindset.
A huge drop in tourists in Fiji due to the pandemic has forced people to till the land to survive. COVID-19 response efforts in the Pacific were high on the agenda for discussions between the governments of New Zealand and Australia this week. New Zealand's Minister for Pacific Peoples, Aupito William Seo, and his Australian counterpart, Senator Zed Seselja, met in Auckland on Friday. This follows a meeting of foreign ministers Nanaia Mahuta and Maurice Payne in Wellington on Thursday. Christine Ravoy reports.
New Zealand and Australia have assured further support for their Pacific neighbours struggling with COVID-19. Papua New Guinea is the worst hit, with more than 10,000 COVID-19 cases and almost 100 deaths reported by the government. Community transmission of the virus has also returned to Fiji this week, with 5 people testing positive to the virus. New Zealand's Minister for Pacific Peoples, Aupito William Seo, says Wellington is working with Canberra to ensure Pacific Islanders are not left behind.
We coordinate with Australia, with the Melanesian countries, PNG, Timor-Leste, but our discussions have been focused on making sure that we're aligning that support, and we'll continue to do that going forward. Our aim is to ensure that the Pacific are not left with any unmet needs, economically or health-wise.
Aupito says outbreaks in some Pacific Island countries, such as Papua New Guinea and Fiji, are overwhelming for the authorities there. He says while the priority for New Zealand's COVID-19 response efforts are with its realm countries, the government stands ready with Australia to assist other nations, including PNG and Fiji.
Australia is an indispensable partner for New Zealand in the Pacific region, and we're working on a range of things, providing direct budget support to countries in the region and now supporting the rollout of the vaccine. And that's work that still has to continue for some time to come.
Aupito's Australian counterpart, Zed Seselja, is spearheading his government's efforts to help the Pacific's economic recovery post-COVID-19, including an emphasis on labour mobility. Senator Seselja says he has conveyed to Aupito how critical it is for Wellington and Canberra to work together for the health and security of the region.
And when we look to the Pacific, we know that working together is critically important for the health and well-being and stability and security of our region. We know that there are some significant challenges ahead. We know that in parts of our region, COVID is still there. It is in places like PNG, Timor-Leste.
Senator Seselja agrees more work is needed to fully assist the Pacific.
In other places where the virus is under control, we know there are great economic challenges. And so together we are up for the challenge, along with our Pacific family, in helping that recovery, in rolling out the vaccine and ensuring that those economies can recover and once again thrive and in time open up travel once again into the region.
To support Pacific exporters in the wake of COVID-19, New Zealand is focused on alleviating pain points facing the region's private sector. Minister for Trade and Export Phil Twyford says the government aims to help businesses offset freight costs incurred due to the pandemic.
New Zealand government support aviation, freight aviation flows internationally for New Zealand, but also to key regional hubs. And that's been critically important to see high value exports and imports keep moving, to ensure that people can fly in and out of the region, but also essential things like medical supplies.
A Pacific export survey released recently shows freight costs are one of the top 3 barriers for exporters in the region. Mr. Twyford says this is further exacerbated with COVID-19 drastically affecting shipping routes, thus inflating costs.
Pacer Plus, our first most important regional trade and economic development agreement, came into force just in December. And Zed, you being here has been a real opportunity for us to redouble the efforts and the cooperation between Australia and New Zealand to support our Pacific partners, to grow opportunities for growers, for entrepreneurs, for traders, for businesses, and make economic development a really powerful force to bring the region closer together.
Meanwhile, Senator Seselja said it was very special to be in New Zealand. He says the diligence, focus and drive both countries have displayed through the pandemic has enabled the free travel between Australia and New Zealand, which resumed on Monday. Ko Christine Ravoe, tēnei.
Vinaka Christine, the Australian delegation left New Zealand on Friday. Tonga's vaccination program against the coronavirus is going well, according to the Ministry of Health Communication Officer Alula Ake. The ministry has issued a schedule which covers the main island of Tongatapu through to May the 8th. The vaccination were launched on April the 15th, with Princess Salote Pilolevu Tuita becoming the first to be inoculated. 24,000 doses of the vaccine have been shipped to Tonga, and it's expected that 20% of the population will be vaccinated by the end of the year. Don Wiseman asked our correspondent in Tonga, Kalafi Moala, if there had been any hitches in the rollout.
Not really, although I think it's becoming apparent that there are those that are resisting. They do not want to be vaccinated for one reason or another, and some are pretty vocal on that. But nevertheless, the rollout goes on right here on the main island of Tongatapu, and they expect that by the end of the year there will be about a quarter of the population vaccinated.
Why so few? Is that purely because that's all Tonga can get in terms of quantities of,
yes,
of vaccine?
Yes, you have to understand that Tonga is totally dependent on foreign aid for this vaccine. This first batch of vaccine was totally financed from Australia. But there's been communication from them that before the end of the year, there'll be a new batch coming in. So Tonga is not paying any cost or any money at all to these vaccines. It's dependent on help and assistance from nations like Australia for that.
Yes. Have authorities talked about just what an ideal proportion of the population they would want to have vaccinated?
Well, they're talking about right now those that are 45 years and older. And with that, you're looking at just a little under 50% of the population. I noticed that there was a vaccination going on in one of the facilities here in Lupalofa. And there were quite a number of young people that were under 40, that went on there thinking that they could get vaccinated and they were refused. So they're pretty strict on the fact that you've got to be 45 years and older.
Although as we can see around the Pacific and PNG, it's affecting people of all ages. So
yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and I think they don't realize as well that some of the very vulnerable people are much younger people. I mean, people, babies, children, but they have made it a policy that only those 45 years and older will be vaccinated.
When you say that people, or a number of people, are opposed, what are the reasons people are giving?
One of the reasons, of course, is that there are conflicting information that are coming, you know, so-called scientific information that basically says these vaccines can cause side effects that are probably just as dangerous as catching the coronavirus. And so there's a lot of that going on. On the other hand, there are also, if you understand, Tonga is a very religious nation, and there are those for religious belief, for one reason or another, believe that the vaccine is not of God, and so they have their reasons for refusing to be vaccinated.
Well, you're well into that crowd of being 45 or above, so have you been inoculated yet?
No, I haven't. It's not that we are necessarily opposed to the vaccine. We just haven't had the time to go up there and get a jab. But no, we haven't been. It's been going on. First 3 days, all the frontliners and vulnerable people were supposed to be vaccinated. But now, all over Tongatapu now, there are even mobile teams that is going around getting people vaccinated.
That was our Tonga correspondent, Kalafi Moala.
A huge drop in tourists in Fiji due to the pandemic has meant growing your own food is not only making a comeback, it's a matter of survival.
About half of Fiji's population depends on tourism, with breadwinners having lost their jobs. One charity in the West is trying to ensure people have seedlings, farming know-how and help to market their produce if they have extra to sell. Sashi Kiran heads up the team at the Foundation for Rural Integrated Enterprises and Development, simply known as FRIEND. Sally Round gave her a call and asked her firstly about Friend's line of traditional organic products.
On the shelves, you'll see traditionally cooked homemade chutneys, herbal teas, gluten-free flour, coconut flour, desiccated coconut. So these are the things that people have in their backyards, and we try and evolve that into products so that they have a value addition. And a lot of these products are healthy. They have no preservatives and so on. So we're basically trying to bring traditional recipes back onto the shelves. While we do that, we work on health and famine because NCD is quite rife, malnutrition is rife. And more recently, since the pandemic hit Fiji, 40% of our GDP was dependent on tourism. And when tourism went, something like 150,000 people have lost their jobs. And if you multiply those 100,000 plus with dependents, it's about half of Fiji's population is heavily impacted with no tourism. So we've been working heavily with them in terms of food bank, nutrition diversity, and food security. Because tourism has been there long enough and most intergenerations for 20, 30 years have not had to really dirty their hands and have been very focused on tourism. So to get into replanting needed a different mindset. And while most people went into root crops, which was easier, we had to keep focusing on diverse range of nutritious vegetables to make sure that the family is eating enough. We've also had TC Anna and continuous rainfall this year. So mostly the impacted, pandemic-impacted Nandi has had continuous floods and damages to the crops as well. So these challenges are there, but most parts of Fiji went into a high gear and high drive of planting. People who have access to land have moved back onto farm.
Are many people grasping the opportunity to do farming, or is it a case of necessity?
Most people, it was almost a natural thing for them to turn to. It brought families together. They found places to garden, easily, readily accessible seeds, borrowing of seedlings. So it was a natural thing for people to move into. And because now there's abundance of tapioca and cassava, we've been evolving a whole range of value addition from there and working with people on how they could make roti or wraps and make flour out of it. Make instant noodles out of it, make biscuits out of it. So we are trying to assist people increase the range of products that they could evolve from manioc. And it's gluten-free, which is amazing. Because normally it will be just boiled or put in the lovo or traded or sold.
Sashi, are some of these people who've lost their jobs and are now growing their own food, are they also doing this commercially?
Yes, there's quite a lot of commercial interest, and we've been very lucky that there's enough interest out of for exports. We've also had interest from New Zealand itself on sourcing organic vegetables and spices and herbs from Fiji. So that's given an additional impetus, encouragement for people to actually work on commercially to be able to sell it.
Now, I've also seen that you offer different types of vegetables for people to grow, which are not necessarily traditional. Oyster mushrooms, for instance.
Mushrooms are so quick and easy to grow, and it requires such little space. So for Nandi in particular, which is urban and peri-urban, and people have very little spaces, the uptake has been good. And people are very excited because, you know, it could take up to 2 weeks for them to see the mushrooms. And you know, we traditionally have not been eating mushrooms, so there's a lot of interest now in cooking mushrooms and value-adding and being able to sell it.
So in general, people coping, do you think, there, especially in the west of Fiji, which has been so badly affected by the lack of tourists?
People have been coping, though in an extreme struggle. What we've seen is much more innovation. People who are skilled have turned to innovation, created a lot of little enterprises where they're able to support the families. But it has been a very difficult journey, especially with continuous rain this year that kept damaging the crops. There is family ties, there's resilience, but it is really at the brink. You know, people are running out of the savings for the past year, whether it's superannuation or personal savings. It's not easy.
That was Sashi Karan talking to RNZ's Country Life program from Lautoka in Fiji. And that's Dateline Pacific for this week, and also our last program of the Dateline Pacific brand Next week, we start our new current affairs program, Pacific Waves, continuing to bring you the major Pacific stories of the week with background and reaction from the people making the news. Tofa soifua.